Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Shay Holbrook from Larson Motorsports Jet Dragster Driver in the IHRA Nitro Jam Drag Racing Series, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the August 11th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder, episode 87 of the series. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and tonight, Michael Mullally and myself will once again try and share some of our viewpoints about motorsports with the world, learn more about our favorite drivers, and bring to the forefront some of the issues surrounding modern auto racing. First off, we'd like to thank Michael Mullally for covering this past weekend's events at the Pacific Raceways. Although the final round of the Protect the Harvest NHRA Northwest Nationals at Pacific Raceways has been postponed until their next stop in Brainerd, it seemed like it was a great event, and several teams set record times. Tonight, we're going to be focusing a little bit on that event. We've got two guests who are participating in the Northwest Nationals. Our first guest is Richie Crampton. Later in the hour, we'll be talking to Ashley Sanford, who's a top alcohol racer. We also have an update from the world of IMSA. Later in the evening, we're going to be talking to Mazda Motorsports prototype driver Joel Miller. So that'll be an interesting thing. He is one of the instructors for the Mazda Road to Indy program, and he's also worked for the Mazda Road to 24 and some of the other Mazda development series, as well as being one of their prototype drivers. So that should be pretty cool. As we're standing by for Michael to call in this evening to review the events at the Protect the Harvest NHRA Northwest Nationals at Pacific Raceways, we'll go ahead and take a moment to listen to one of the songs from Ron Pestana and the Pit Crew. This is Devil in Your Helmet.
Sorry about your race car. It sure looks bent. Will you be here next week? And are we still friends? I really didn't mean it. It was a racing deal. I got a little too close. It got a little too real. Then you checked up in the corner and I tapped you in the rear. You were spinning somewhere and it's all so clear. There's a devil in your helmet. Who's on tonight?
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Giving bad advice.
Devil in your helmet.
It's been a good day so far. I put her in the show. Sitting nice and pretty outside front row. Two laps later, babe is on a rail, going for the lead with the devil on my tail. Then wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, where'd they all go? Late break, burn, turn, there's the wall, no. Please not the radiator, please not the clip. You may be the savior, but here's a little tip. Well, there's a devil in your helmet, who's on tonight?
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Giving bad advice. Put her on the trailer, take her to the shop. Lay in bed, toss and turn, well, shouldn't I not? Plan a little payback, plan a little hell. Y'all shake your hand, pal, but only time will tell. If there's a devil in your helmet, who's on tonight?
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Giving bad advice.
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Well, so the story goes. Everybody knows, and now everybody knows.
I can't hear it.
Once again, that was Devil in Your Helmet by Ron Pastana and the Pit Crew. You can look for that online. Check it out on YouTube. I believe it's on there. You can also download it on iTunes. We'd now like to bring on Michael Mullally, who's just spent the weekend at the NHRA Northwest Nationals. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. Happy to be in the air conditioning. It's a little too toasty.
Hello?
Hello, yep.
Okay.
So,
well, since in the script it shows I'm supposed to talk about my weekend, I guess I will start there. So we left Friday morning. My nephew was up at 3 in the morning, ready to go. And we got there around 10-ish, 11-ish, somewhere in there. And we went and we got our passes. We got them. A ride around the track. That was pretty cool. And anyways, we got our passes, and it was pretty hot up there for a while, but then it started to, like, cool off to the point where I needed a sweatshirt. But the cars were going fast, and teams were breaking records left and right, and, yeah, the racing was actually pretty good. And then during elimination, we watched Courtney Forrest hit the wall. She was okay, though, so that was good. And again, people were just setting records and track records, and people that you thought were going to win actually didn't win. They actually got beat, so that was pretty interesting. And it ended up getting rained out, which really sucked because I was really looking forward to the final rounds, but I guess they're going to do those at the next track they go to, so that'll be interesting. But there's a good crowd there. There's actually a really good crowd there, a lot of people, but it was actually pretty cool, and the racing was really good, and the weather for the most part was pretty nice, of course, until eliminations. So yeah, it was a pretty good weekend. Met some pretty cool people, got to interview Antron Brown, who was in the final round for Top Fuel Dragster, so that's pretty cool. And talked to Tony Schumacher, but I think he was a little bit upset because I don't think the day quite was going how he anticipated it would. But other than that, I mean, all in all, it was a pretty good weekend, and I'm glad I got to go.
Okay, so can you hear me now? This is a test of the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Adam Sinclair on Thursday Night Thunder. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but we're going to try again now. Our first guest tonight is Richie Crampton. Crampton came to the United States in 2004 to pursue his dream of driving a Top Fuel dragster in the NHRA. That dream came true when he was named driver for Morgan Lucas Racing in 2014. But Crampton has done more than drive. He has won again and again.
Crampton won two races in his initial season, including the prestigious U.S. Nationals in Indianapolis, and claimed the Road to the Future Award as NHRA's top rookie. But 2015 was even better, as he won five times and ended up finishing third in the Top Fuel point standing. Crampton grew up in Adelaide, Australia, dreaming of competing in the pinnacle of drag racing, NHRA, His father, Alan, ran a carburetor repair shop, so the young Crampton was always around cars and engines, learning to hone his mechanical skills.
Crampton's eyes really lit up when local hot rodders brought their cars in, fueling a passion that still burns today. Alan got him a go-kart, insisting that Crampton do all the work on it. By the time he was 14, he was finished with go-karts and built a 7-second drag race car that used his local drag strip. That facility closed in 2002, putting Crampton on a path that would lead him to the United States. He moved to Sydney, Australia to work on a top fuel team that later competed in NHRA events in the U.S. That team eventually returned to Australia, but Crampton didn't. He joined Morgan Lucas Racing in 2007 and served as clutch specialist and car chief until 2014, when Morgan Lucas decided to stop racing full-time, and the team looked at Crampton to fill the seat. Crampton had filled in during the test in Indianapolis in 2013 and was a logical choice for the full-time ride.
The team's faith was rewarded when Crampton won in Englishtown, New Jersey to complete a special few weeks for him. Daughter Emma was born to Crampton and partner Stephanie Lasky a few days earlier, and Alan and June Crampton happened to be in the U.S. on vacation. Crampton took another big step in winning the U.S. Nationals that year, and he finished ninth in the top fuel standing. That was simply a prelude to an even bigger 2015 season, which he started with a bang by winning 5 rounds in the first 4 races before storming to victory in Las Vegas. Victories in Topeka, Bristol, and Brainerd followed, and Crampton began to the countdown to the championship in 3rd place in the points. The playoffs didn't go exactly as the team had hoped, but a victory in Dallas and a semifinal appearance at the season finale in Pomona wrapped up a top 3 finish.
We are now happy to welcome Richie Crampton to the program. How are you doing
this
evening?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Not going too bad. Just a few technical issues here, but nothing too horrible, hopefully. We know your weekend in Seattle ended sooner than you had hoped, but how do you feel your performance there will help you going into Minnesota?
I think our weekend, not only in Seattle, but the weekend prior to that in Sonoma, California, them 2 weekends were really get-healthy weekends for us, and we got a lot of valuable information by running our race car in not only the hot weather conditions, but the cooler weather conditions that we saw in Seattle. So I think we've learned a lot, and we've made a lot of changes to our race car because we have struggled a little this season, but I think we've turned the corner and we've got everything where it needs to be to have a good race weekend in Brainerd. You know, going back as defending event champions, we're hoping to do well there.
What's your favorite racetrack?
For me, I'd have to say it's pretty tough. I won the U.S. Nationals here in Indianapolis, where I now live, in 2014. So that's almost a hometown track for me. So it's a coin flip between Indianapolis here or the first NHRA racetrack I ever went to, which was Pomona, California. I flew over in 1999 on my own just to spectate at that racetrack and take in some NHRA drag racing. And now for me to get to compete on that very racetrack that I was in awe of in 99, it's pretty cool. And it's kind of the birthplace of drag racing, Southern California. So Pomona and Indy are my 2 favorites.
Growing up, who was your racing role model?
Well, there was a lot of local guys where I grew up in Australia that raced and raced well, not only in drag racing, but, you know, other forms of motorsport as well. But really, you know, even growing up in Australia, I was able to keep my finger on the pulse with what was going on over here in the U.S. And I really liked Ron Capps. You know, he's still a current, you know, competitive funny car driver. And in my teenage years, you know, I looked up to him and, you know, he was my hero. He did the big burnouts and good interviews and just seemed like a cool guy. So definitely looked up to Capps.
How did you decide to travel from Australia to compete in the National Hot Rod Association?
Yeah, it was a big step for me. Now that I'm a parent, I don't know how my parents allowed me to do what I did, but I guess they, you know, wanted me to follow my dreams. And for me, it was just to be involved in NHRA drag racing. I had been in drag racing, you know, since I was about 15 years old, and I really wanted to make a career out of drag racing, and for me, I thought that was really just going to be a crew position, which is, you know, where I'd end up spending my, you know, the rest of my career. But, you know, to have taken it one step further and to now be driving is kind of, you know, reward for taking that big step and moving to another country and leaving your family and friends behind to go and pursue a sport that you love. You know, I'm just very fortunate that I fell in well with the Lucas team and the Lucas Oil family, and they've given me these great opportunities, and they've really, you know, welcomed me and you know, gave me everything I could have ever dreamed of over here, and so I'm just really lucky to be in the position I am. But it was a big step to take, and really I just didn't know where it was going to end up when I left, and fortunately it's been a what I'd call a success story. I'm really, really lucky.
We know you're in eighth place in the standings, currently in the top fuel ranks. How do you feel your shots are getting into the countdown to the championship?
Well, you know, in order to be a contender for the championship, you need to be in the top 10 after Indianapolis. So that's two more races for us. We got Brainerd and then Indy. So providing we can maintain eighth place, or, you know, maybe even try and do a little better than eighth before the countdown starts after Indianapolis, I think we'll be, you know, in almost as good a place as any to contend for the championship. You know, we've seen Robert Hyatt won from the 10th position a few years ago. So as long as you're in the top 10 after Indy, you know, when they reset the points for the last six races for the countdown, you have a shot at it. So that's the good part about the way the NHRA season works now is really the business end of the year is the last six events. And so that's where we're really trying to focus on, you know, getting some round wins and of course, trying to win some more races and really contend for a championship for everyone that puts us out there, like Lucas Oil and Toyota.
Now I'd like to throw you out to my co-host, Michael Mullally, who's in Afraid of Washington and just visited the NHRA event in Seattle this past weekend. She has a few questions for you as well.
Okay.
So what about the sport of drag racing intrigued you the most?
I think for me, you know, anyone that hasn't been to a drag race probably doesn't know what I mean by it, but to stand in the grandstands and even in the pit area and get around these race cars that make 10,000 horsepower and accelerate faster than any other kind of race car on the planet, it's just the raw power that makes the ground shake and the hair on the back of your neck stand up is what really drew me into drag racing when I was a kid. And I was, you know, a big fan of the sport. I still am. And, you know, the competition of competing at 300 miles per hour side by side is really what draws me into, you know, to continue to do what I do.
If you had the ability to change anything for the sport for the better, would you change anything about NHRA drag racing?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think it's in a great spot right now. You know, I know a lot of purists would like to see the sport go back to a quarter mile instead of 1,000-foot racing, but, you know, a lot of the venues we race at simply don't have the real estate available to give us the shutdown area that we need to continue to make these race cars go as fast as we do. So I'm content with it to stay at 1,000-foot. I think it's compacted the competition and made the racing so much tighter that it makes a better show for the fans as well. So really, no, there's nothing I'd like to change. And, you know, it's really exciting with our new outlook with the Fox Network and Fox Sports 1 showing our broadcasts, you know, on network television. The ratings are going through the roof. So I think in general the sport's on the way up. It's the fastest growing motorsport, and I think it's that way for a reason because it's an awesome show.
To you, what is the scariest part about piloting a top fuel dragster?
that's a hard question to answer. You know, we take it for granted just with every other style of racing that bad stuff can happen. But honestly, you block that out. I block that out to a point where it doesn't scare me. I guess the fear of the unknown. You know, things can happen, and it's just a matter of when, you know, and how bad. So really, the fear of the unknown. But no racer really likes talking about what can happen. But there's some possibilities out there. But hopefully, I don't have any to report anytime soon.
Can you explain to us how hard it is to keep a top fuel dragster in a straight line at 300 plus miles per hour?
Yeah, it's sounds like a pretty simple concept to drive a race car in a straight line, but these cars, they make so much horsepower, and the chassis is so flexible, and the rear tires are conforming to the racetrack and distorting to where they steer the car a little bit as well, that, you know, it's really like driving, sometimes it's like driving a car on wet grass, you know, or on a snow-covered road. It's hard to keep them pointed in the right direction, and you're covering so much ground so quickly that if you deviate from your course just for a split second, you're all of a sudden out of the groove and possibly not in the best part of the racetrack to maintain traction. And that's where you'll spin the tires and get close to the wall or close to the center line, which obviously you don't want to do. So it's really just hard to focus. Your vision is so blurry for the first half of the run because you're strapped into the race car, you're part of the race car, and there's, no suspension. Every single thing on the car is rigid. So you feel every vibration, and that vibration goes through your body and makes it difficult to see. But so really the focus is the hard part as far as where to point the race car and to continue to steer it in the right direction during the run. After half track, it really smooths out, and it's not so bad to keep the thing pointed in the right direction if it's running on all eight cylinders. But if the race car stops running on all eight cylinders, whichever side isn't firing will have less thrust than the other. So that will help steer the race car around as well, which can be a bit of a handful. So there's a lot going on. It's not just a matter of driving straight down the road, but they're a huge amount of fun to drive.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Hopefully still where I'm at, driving a top-fuel dragster for a living and, hopefully known as a dependable, reliable, competitive racer amongst my peers. That's really all I ever wanted when I was a kid, and just working on finishing that deal off and trying to contend for championships and race for a living. That's really, really what I want to do.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show this evening and wish you lots of luck next week and as well as in Indianapolis in a couple more weeks.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
You too. Bye.
Once again, that was Richard Crampton, who drives for Morgan Lucas Racing in the Top Fuel division of the National Hot Rod Association. We're still standing by for our next guest to call in, Joel Miller, the driver of the number 70 Mazda prototype in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. So while we're standing by, we're going to take a short break and listen to another song from Ron Pastana and the Pit Crew. This is Angel in Flames.
She got attitude, she's
Once again, that was a little snippet from Angel in Flames by Ron Pisano and the Pit Crew. Be sure to check that out online. I believe they have it on iTunes. You've got a lot of different songs all related to motorsports. Be sure to check that out. As I stated a second ago, our next guest tonight is Joel Miller. Miller, age 28, is a co-driver of the number 70 Mazda prototype in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. He is the featured presenter in the National Touring Mazda STEM Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math Education Program, and RACE, the Racing Accelerators Creative Education Program, and is official driver coach, mentor of the Mazda Road to Indy Program.
He has an extensive background in karting and open-wheel racing, including the step of the Mazda Road to Indy. He was selected for the Team USA program in 2007, which allowed him to compete in England. In 2013, he signed with Mazda to become one of the factory sports car drivers and to help develop the diesel engine program.
A native of Southern California, he is also a degreed mechanical engineering person from the University of California, Riverside. We are now happy to welcome Joel Miller into the Thunderdome.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Glad to be on this evening.
First off, congratulations on the team's recent pole at Road America. Although the race didn't end as well as you had hoped, do you feel you learned enough to help you as the season winds down?
Yeah, we're in the home stretch here of the championship of our 10 races this year. So we got two big ones left, one in Texas and then the 10-hour Petit Le Mans at Road Atlanta coming up a month and a half. So we've been learning all year. We've showed the speed, obviously, with the pole, multiple poles this year. We just kind of got to finish the story now, the last hour of the race, and bring it home.
Over the past few years on this program, we've had the honor to chat with several drivers who've come through the Mazda Road Indy program. For our listeners who may not be familiar, can you describe a little about the program and your role in it?
The Mazda Road Indy program is the official ladder to the IndyCar series, the Verizon IndyCar series. It starts out at the USF 2000, which is the entry level straight from go-karting. You would move up into the USF 2000, and that is really the basis of the entire ladder. From there, you can move up to Pro Mazda, and then from Pro Mazda, you move up to Indy Lights. Mazda provides a scholarship, the only person in motorsport to provide a scholarship to the champions of each respected series, that if you win the previous series, you move on to the next step on a fully funded program. People like Spencer Pigot have won all the way from the beginning and moved all the way into IndyCar, so it's a proven ladder. I've come through it myself before switching over to sports cars from USF 2000 to Pro Mazda to Indy Lights with victories along the way there. And then my current role, because I've been at every level, been a part of the scholarship myself, is more so a mentor to all the drivers as well as parents. To kind of answer questions, give feedback, and then on the race weekends, offer advice. And then once practice is done, I'm also a liaison to the race director as a driver steward, just to help with any on-track incidents up in race control to kind of give a driver's perspective to keep fairness across all three series as well as consistency. So it's something fun to do when I take the helmet off in between our own race events.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the race program?
The race program is under the Mazda Drive for Good banner. RACE stands for Racing Accelerates Creative Education, and we use it a lot to talk about STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. We've talked to close to 30,000 students nationwide. So before every race weekend, possibly on a Tuesday or a Wednesday leading up to it, we'll go to a local high school, maybe two, talk to mainly upper division students just about what motorsport has to offer in terms of the STEM fields, the STEM disciplines, and to challenge those students to really pay attention in those STEM discipline classes and show them through racing that what they're learning at the high school level is the foundation for what they'll build on in college and ultimately make a career. Some of them really think that racing is an untouchable sport because you have to be the driver or maybe the team owner, but there's so many avenues. We show them over 50 careers in racing that with the STEM disciplines they could be involved in. We give out some tickets, and we usually get a good group of them coming to the racetrack. So if we could make, one, a new race fan, and two, if we could inspire a few kids' possible life journey that they may have not have thought before the program, then we've done our job. So it's really rewarding in that regard. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yep. Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
All right. I think he is having some technical difficulties. So I'm going to attempt to take it over for him until he can figure himself out. So, how do you feel about the changes IMSA is making going into 2017, and do you think Mazda will benefit from some of those changes?
With the recent release of the IMSA WeatherTech Championship calendar for next year, we're sticking with, you know, the same racetracks with a few date adjustments, and then the ladder really has had some adjustments as well on the sports car side. So in Mazda's perspective, the road to the 24-hour, there's been some adjustments there. The good part is Mazda's still involved, because without Mazda, there will be a lot of kids right now, current drivers, myself included, that wouldn't be able to reach the higher echelons of the sport on sports cars. So the changes that IMSA has done has obviously been to help the current teams to allow them to compete with new machinery, with new cars. And then from a Mazda perspective, still being involved allows us to still have the scholarships, which is what we're very keen on, because we're about building the next generation of drivers as well. So I think it'll be good. Well, I guess time will tell. The good thing is there's still a ladder to the top.
And what is the most what do you like most about IMSA? Like, what really draws your attention to it the most?
So the IMSA Championship, I raced with them. We were part of their sanctioned body back in 2008-07 with the open-wheel stuff. But the cool part about IMSA racing is the multi-class racing. You have prototypes racing against production-based GT models. We go to some fantastic racetracks across the U.S. We still go to some of the old-school tracks that people have a lot of history, such as Road America, Road Atlanta, Watkins Glen, Canadian Tire Motorsport Park up in Canada, as well as the one we all love, Monster Raceway Laguna Seca out here in California. I think that in itself is awesome about the series, is just the diversity of everything that we do. Also, you have manufacturer racing. You have Mazda racing against Chevrolet, against Nissan, against Honda, and it's really manufactured-based racing. Nobody has the same car that looks like your competitor's car, like you might get in NASCAR or IndyCar. You know, those are very, everything looks the same. Sports car racing, everything looks different. You have a lot of brand awareness. You have fans that are very passionate about which brand they support. And I think the fan involvement is one of the key things that IMSA has that's really important, that makes the race weekends really fun. And then from a driver's perspective, the racing is always fierce, because we try to exercise where our cars might be better than the others and vice versa.
Would you ever be interested in driving for someone other than Mazda, or is that where your heart is right now?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I've been with Mazda for so long. I have a very, very close relationship with everybody with the brand. John Doonan's one of a personal best friend of mine, team owner as well, Sylvain Tremblay, been with that group since 2013. But I want to stay with this brand. I would love to win a championship with the brand, and ultimately would want to go to Le Mans with the brand and repeat what they did back in the early 90s and win at Le Mans again.
What other forms of auto racing do you follow?
So auto racing has been my life and passion ever since I was little, starting in go-karts. I would definitely say IndyCar. My heart was and still has a special spot for the Indianapolis 500. When I was climbing the open-wheel ladder all the way up through Indy Lights, following it very intently, I have a lot of friends over there, I think would be my goal. Always love watching Formula One, of course. And then whenever NASCAR is on a road course, I'll definitely tune into those.
And my last question for you this evening, where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
5 to 10 years, man, that's almost scary to look forward that far. Hopefully got a Daytona 24 winning on the resume, maybe a Le Mans as well. So sports cars right now is definitely my home, and I would love to stay here, as I mentioned earlier, and win some championships and races with Mazda.
Well, we would like to thank you for coming on the program tonight, and we apologize for the technical difficulties, but I think we figured it out.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for having me on. Would love to do it again.
Of course. Good luck the rest of your season.
All right. Thank you, guys, and have a good one.
You as well. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. So, yeah, we're still having a few technical difficulties, but that was Joel Miller from the Mazda series. So our last guest tonight is Ashley Sanford. Although the tradition might be ladies first, I'd like to think that perhaps we saved the best for last. As early as age 8, Californian Ashley Sanford knew she was at home behind the wheel of a race car. When other children her age were playing with toy cars in the dirt, Sanford was winning the first event she entered while at the controls of an ATV on a sand drag strip. Sanford might as well have been raised sipping from a warm bottle of 70-weight oil in between turns, chomping on a piston pacifier. The now 22-year-old from Fullerton, California, was born, as the saying goes, with drag racing already flowing in her veins. Sanford's early racing heroes were her dad, Shane, and her grandfather, Ed, who successfully campaigned sand dragster entries. Now, as she continues her quest to be among drag racing's elite stars on pavement, the Southern California native competes in NHRA's, National Hot Rod Association, equivalent of Major League Baseball's minor leagues, in the top alcohol dragster class, the quickest and fastest class of the NHRA Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series, AAA, if you will. The next step for the feisty racer is the call to the big leagues. And Top Fuel, driving the world's quickest and fastest race cars that accelerate to more than 100 miles per hour in less than a second and blister a 1,000-foot track in less than 3.8 seconds. Sanford's contemporary racing heroes also have had a hand in the tutelage of this rising straight-line star as she climbs through the ranks of competition and a sport famous for its diversity. The future is indeed extraordinarily bright for Sanford, who not only wants to race with her heroes, but also has the right amount of confidence needed to be a winner among them. When asked whom she would like to see alongside her in the other lane in her first Top Fuel final round, Sanford replied with a glowing smile, "The loser." We'd now like to welcome Ashley Sanford to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. How are you?
I am doing great, and I just want to apologize in advance. I'm actually on my way home from Seattle all the way down the coast to my home in Southern California, so I'm stuck in L.A. traffic, so if you hear any honking, it's probably some crazy L.A. person next to me.
All right. So, although your run in Pacific Raceways didn't go as you hoped, do you think you learned anything that will help you going into Las Vegas?
Yes, absolutely. We went to Seattle knowing there was a small car count and we could play around with quite a few different things and no matter what, be qualified into race day. And unfortunately, those things didn't go as planned, but that's a part of racing. And every time going down the track, you learn something, whether it's what you want it to do or whether it's not. And we'll make sure we get those bugs figured out, which we ended up doing so in our first round of eliminations. But Joey Severance, who we faced, just had an incredible run in the other lane that we couldn't compete with at the time. But it's all good because we learned a lot as a team, and we'll definitely take that to Vegas with us.
So how many events do you race per year?
Well, it just depends on our team's funding. This year it's been a little rougher than others, but that's, you know, life, that's racing. And this year we're probably going to get to about 8 races. We have for sure 4 more to look forward to this year, but we're still working hard, getting out there, talking to sponsors and possible sponsors to see if we can make it to even more.
Who is your racing role model?
Ooh, that's a hard one, because I guess I kind of categorize it to where I look up to different drivers for different reasons. I'll always look up to my dad and my grandpa, number one, because they're the reason I'm racing, and the people I looked up to since the second I can remember looking at a dragster. I wanted to be just like my dad and just like my grandpa, and even though they didn't even compete competitively, it was just incredible to me what they did. They were superheroes, you know, in a tiny little capsule that would shoot down the racetrack. So they started it all for me, but I absolutely look up to racing legends like Tony Schumacher, who I've actually, since racing, he's kind of come out of his way to help me out, and he is an incredible person and an incredible driver because he personally told me he wants to make sure our future of the sport is bright, and if I have any questions, I can look up to him, and hearing that from the most winningest top fuel driver ever is probably the coolest thing, because for me, I still can barely believe I'm out there racing and in the staging lanes next to these guys, even though I'm not competing in their class, you know, being in the class right underneath them, which most of the top fuel funny car stars start off in the alcohol ranks. It's a really, really exciting feeling, and it just makes me look forward to the future.
So for those listeners who may not be aware, can you explain the difference between a top alcohol dragster and a top fuel dragster?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the alcohol class is the fastest class on the quarter mile. We are the cutoff there because now that the top fuel cars are going so fast, I heard Richie mention before they've had to shut it down to 1,000 foot, but alcohol class and the dragsters, we have two types of cars you can race in. I personally drive.
Well, it appears that we have lost her, or my phone is the one messing up now. So, let's see. Right. Well, that's too bad. I was really enjoying your interview. We'll give it about another minute before we close it up.
Hello.
Okay, you're there. I'm sorry. I thought my phone was messing up.
No problem. Yeah, no, all of a sudden I looked down and it said my call was gone. So I'm not sure how much you guys heard of what I said or not.
No, I think we lost you about halfway through your answer, so if you would mind kind of re-explaining it again, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. It's totally fine. Well, let's see. Halfway through, I'll kind of sum it up quicker this time, I guess. I drive an A-fuel dragster, and in my class, an alcohol class, we have two kinds of dragsters. A-fuel, which is nitro-injected and blown cars with the blower and alcohol, as well as underneath the top fuel class, and the top fuel class has the nitro and blower belt on it, which is now producing almost over 11,000 horsepower, which is incredible, and we're going about 280, 275 on the quarter mile, and the top fuel cars are going over 330 miles an hour in only 1,000 feet, so I would absolutely love to feel what 300 miles an hour feels like. But 275 is pretty amazing, too.
I think the most I've felt is like 110, so I can only imagine how much crazier that has to be.
Right, and it's crazy because even though you can run, you know, a 265 run to a 275 run, you feel the difference, which is absolutely crazy to say and hear, but it really does make a difference.
What is your ultimate racing goal?
My ultimate goal is to make it a part of the top fuel class and compete with the best in NHRA drag racing ever since I was a little girl, going out to the Pomona California racetrack at the Winter Nationals and finals every year. It was just a dream looking at those cars, to be able to know what it'd be like to be behind the wheel and compete and have a blast, because to me, drag racing is the funnest thing you could do in the world, in my opinion. So to go that fast and be a part of such an extraordinary sport and compete for, I would hope, the rest of my life is my ultimate goal.
Now, in your introduction, you know, you've obviously been around drag racing for a very long time. And I was in Seattle this weekend, and I got to say, your runs were actually pretty impressive. But would you ever consider, or have you ever did, like, any type of circle track racing or dirt racing or anything, or is it just straight down for you, done and over with?
You know what? I actually grew up going out to the desert, out in our local deserts in Southern California, and I love going in circles and romping around stuff. So I would, if I had the opportunity, I would love to see what it'd be like to do something different, completely not just stuck going straight. But then again, my favorite part about drag racing is the speed and the adrenaline rush you get from that amount of power and horsepower. So I don't see myself going in another direction as far as my career goes, but hey, you never know what'll happen.
Can you explain to us how intense the G-forces are at 200 plus miles per hour?
It is intense. No, it's incredible, because by the time you get in the car and you hit the throttle right as the Christmas tree goes down, you are thrown back into your seat and tunnel vision kicks in. And as you just keep going, you're literally stuck to the side or the back of your seat until you hit those chutes. And even though my guys tighten me in so tight to where I can barely breathe, I get thrown forward. And I mean, my seatbelts loosen up a few inches afterwards after hitting the chutes. So if that says anything, it's amazing. I mean, half the time I get out of my car, I'm out of breath just from the adrenaline. It's the best feeling in the world.
Well, we would like to thank you very much for coming on and getting our technical difficulties in stride. And we would like to wish you best for the rest of your career and hopefully talk to you again to see how that's going.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come back and talk to you guys about all the exciting things ahead. And thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
So that was Ashley Stanford on her way home from the Seattle races. Hopefully she makes it to Top Fuel, because that would be pretty cool. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. We also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. In addition, if you're a fan of South Florida, and who isn't, be sure to check out the latest news and information about our Slice of Paradise at Palm Beach Happening, which can be found by visiting palmbeach.happeningmag.com. Stay tuned on Twitter at PB Happening, on the website, Instagram, and more, and find out what's happening in the Palm Beaches. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome, when we will be delving into the wonderful world of modern motorsports with guests representing the top series in the nation and beyond. Have a great night.